and welcome to Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the leafy Luke Cutler.
I'm not a tree.
This week we're talking about meat matters, but first we have a Spotify update.
How many are there?
There's one Spotify, but what I want to talk about, Luke, is that we peaked last year at 21 in the science charts on Spotify. Isn't that good?
That's amazing. We beat a bunch of like fancy, expensive podcasts.
Yeah, and if you want us to beat even more of those fancy, expensive podcasts this year in 2024, get us to number 3. I'd say number 1, but hey.
We'll take number 3.
There's always room for improvement. So if you get us to number 3 on Spotify, the science charts, we will make Luke eat his own hat.
Can it be made of something edible?
No. It will be made of leather. A leather hat.
No, please.
And the question for you, Luke, if you want to answer this question, by the way, head down to the comments on YouTube or to somewhere on Spotify. And if you're not on either of those places, here's what you do. You grow a tree, an entire tree. You chop it down. You keep on doing that again and again and again and again until the planet is mostly destroyed. And then, I don't know, smoke signal or something. Just do some deforestation, I think. We'll get the picture.
It sounds like most of the Western world is trying to contact you.
Exactly. And the question that they're answering is, are you vegan?
Yes.
Wow. Most of the Western world is vegan. That's why they're chopping down all the trees, so they can eat them. I'm sure that's how it works, right? Yeah. No, we're obviously talking about veganism today, the science of veganism. So what do you know about veganism, Luke?
I know what it is. I know the ways in which it's beneficial, and I know that it's been around for longer than people would maybe expect.
Yeah, I suppose.
Longer than like the big, like all the products have been around, and it's been like sort of popular. There were some like real hardworking legends in like the 60s and 70s.
Even earlier than that.
Trying to get it done.
Even earlier than that.
Really?
I'll tell you why, yeah. Lots of animals that are vegan. Lots of them.
Oh.
Yeah.
You mean herbivores?
Vegans?
Vegans.
I'm...
Are you a vegan if you are unable to digest anything else?
Yeah.
I don't think you are.
Well, there are plenty of omnivores that adopt a largely vegan... Pandas, the original vegans live. Anyway, shall we talk about the problem with meat?
Yes, please.
Do you know anything about the problem with meat?
Well, it produces a lot of greenhouse gases.
Yeah.
You only get about 10% of the calories you put in out, like calories that you can actually use. About 10 times more calories have to go into the animal before they get to you. And there's lots of farts going on.
More burps than farts. But sure, yeah, from cows, I assume you're talking about.
Well, yeah. Do chickens burp and fart?
No, it's mostly cows that are the...
No, I know, but I wanted to know if the chickens burp and fart.
I don't know whether chickens do.
Presumably fart, but I don't think burp.
I don't know, but I doubt that they do. Look, it's not really what I was planning on talking about today, but you're right that, yeah, meat has a high greenhouse gas sort of emission. It does a lot of them, is what I'm trying to get across. But yeah, so we've not actually been eating as much meat as we eat now for all that long.
Mm.
You know, like if you go back to sort of the 70s, it was increasing, but less than it is now. I mean, even before that, meat was one of those things that, you know, wasn't something that you had every day as part of every meal, which people kind of do now. It was something you had way less regularly as a, oh, it's meat time, nice.
Yeah, and the trouble is that as countries, especially countries out in the, what we would call the East in the world, gain in sort of their middle class grows and their wealth grows, in the same way that like, you know, they're using more fossil fuels but didn't do the majority of the mess. That was sort of us lot in the West did that. Meat is seen as like this real like status symbol, like, oh, I'm doing well, so I eat a lot of meat.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it kind of feels difficult to like, at least from like a global warming perspective, how do we go, no, you don't get to do that when we did that. We did that real hard.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yes, but also, you can't just be like, oh, well, we did it, so everyone gets to do it, and then let's stop. It's probably about bringing people up to a level and bringing ourselves to that same level. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, we give up some comforts and whatnot that we have now whilst raising everyone to a to a decent like standard of living. Do you know
yeah,
what I mean?
But we're also not dropping. So
yeah, but we yeah. would need to. Do you know what I mean?
No, I know.
Yeah, well, I mean, in any case, if we're saying drop, like don't increase the way that you're increasing because it's dangerous. We know because we did it. We're also not going to do anything. I think that's bad in itself.
No, I know.
We did it, and that it, you know what I mean. It's like you can't be that petty of like. Well, look, you guys had an empire, so I guess all of us get to have an empire. Well, no, because empires are bad. Like, you know, we can all agree on that, right? We can all agree that empire is not good.
I don't think that if we...
No, I don't think anyone can agree.
If we asked the world, I don't think many people would say, yeah, empire's bad.
I think they think empire's bad when it's someone else.
Yeah.
Empire's good when I agree with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, right? And no, it is a difficult situation, but also... The evidence is relatively clear, right? I mean, you constantly see people saying, oh, well, actually, veganism is it's got a high cost. You don't look at this, you don't look at that. But whenever you look into it, it seems that still veganism is, like, reducing your animal product intake is invariably a better option in terms of greenhouse gas emissions or... you know, cancer risks and whatnot, right? Like, just a reduction, not even necessarily a complete sort of not doing this at all. A reduction has positive effects, pretty much invariably.
Yeah,
right?
I'm sure we'll get into more detailed examples of this, but I think the most, like, surface level, obvious, weird one that is always said that you can easily debunk is like, well, soy production does this to the world. It's like, well, but most of the soy is fed to the cows that you eat.
I've got the numbers here. It's maybe 6% of soy. Yeah, 6% of soy is grown for human consumption. And in 2013 to 2014, it was 75% of the soy produced worldwide just became animal feed.
Yeah, they really thought they had us in that. And then not so much.
Here's the thing. I feel like when people make arguments against vegans, and they're like, actually, you are worse for the environment because of all your processed foods and because of all of this and that. If you were just like me and had just nice whole foods, then we wouldn't be in this situation. One, vegans don't need to have processed foods. Lentils exist. And, you know, like, you can still get by on that. Fail it fairly easily, right? The only reason that vegans have the other processed foods is because everyone else is also having processed foods. People that have meat are also having processed foods. They just need to process plants before they then process the meat in those foods. Also, you're also eating fruit and vegetables, you know, if you're eating meat. It's not like you're a carnivore and you're on an exclusive carnivore diet where you're only eating meat. Unless you're an idiot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that specific idiot and other idiots, but specifically that idiot. You know, you're also contributing to the sort of, I guess, the effects that vegetables and fruit production are having on the planet, right? So you can't just be like, oh, well, actually, you're bad too, or you're worse, because you're, in any case, you are doing both things. If you're eating meat and also vegetables, right?
Yeah, and we're not going to, like, we might reduce them, but we're not going to put the processed food genie back in the bottle. Like, we're just not going to do it. I don't think that at least within my lifetime will be like everyone's eating a whole grain diet.
I agree. And I think there's a level where it's probably fine. But if we're having meat, that level is like the amount of processed food you can have if you're eating meat is probably going to be a lot lower than with non-meat alternatives. Because... Because you need to feed the meat non-meat.
Yeah, just thermodynamically, it's impossible.
It doesn't make sense.
You can't beat us. Like, you just can't. Like, thermodynamically, it's literally impossible.
And it's not possible to have the scale of meat consumption that we have now and have you know, the sort of, oh, it's all whole grass-fed beef and, you know, there's no factory farm. You cannot have, you know, the amount of meat consumption that we have right now on the scale that we do right now without... whilst changing the sort of process that we have to produce that meat, right? You can't just have people getting it from local farms. There are not enough local farms to produce sustainable meat to have it to satisfy, you know, what our current sort of appetite for it is.
You want really high house prices? Try local farms. Like, all the downside's got to go somewhere. And it will, like, you know, that will take up loads of land and then your house prices will be more expensive.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, that's...
Do not quote me on that from an economics perspective, but, like, the sentiment being, if you want to use more local land in your country, like, then necessarily land is then at a premium in your country.
Yeah, and if it's not house prices, it's other spaces, right? We've already, I mean, the amount of the UK that is just farmland, right? Like, if you look at it, you know, those sort of satellite pictures.
Oh, yeah. If you drive out to the west of England, you suddenly hit, like, miles and miles and miles and miles of farm. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. But also the way that we sort of think of that is just, that's just how it naturally is.
Yeah, no, I'm like, oh, that's where the cornflakes come from.
Yeah.
Like, I never thought about where the cornflakes come from, but no, that's, it's this gigantic, like, football field of wheat.
But also, before we flattened it and did all this stuff to it to make it good farmland, probably was something else there, right? Do you know what I mean? Like, we talk about the sort of deforestation when it comes to the Amazon and whatnot. We don't necessarily think of the effects that we've had on our own country, because it's just existed, you know what I mean, it's existed for so long, it's just become like it's just become natural to us. And farmland isn't all that natural at all, right? It's not biodiverse. You get maybe hedges around the edges, which are better, but like, there are not many things that can live on farmland, which, yeah, we need it to some degree to, you know, feed ourselves, so that's fine. But also, we should probably think about the effects that this has on the life that lives around us.
Yeah, it's also not just like there's not much stuff that can live on farmland. We actively don't want stuff to live on farmland.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, true. We're
like, it's not just like, this is not a very habitable environment. We make it even more inhabitable environment.
But back to the sort of meat consumption, right? So, as I was saying, it's been increasing since the 60s. The food sort of system, all of the stuff that we use to produce food takes about 70% of the world's fresh water and 78% of the fresh water pollution. So that's good, isn't it?
That's real good.
It's real good. Those are good numbers.
Exciting and sexy.
Jeez. But yeah, basically livestock, so, you know, bloody animals, when it comes to agriculture, though they have a big impact on lots of things. We've already spoken about greenhouse gases. We've mentioned water, but that also then leads to sort of water scarcity as well, right? Like, water, it feels like it's an infinite resource because it falls from the sky and it is kind of everywhere, but it's not all usable. Do you know what I mean? Like, if we pollute a certain amount of water, or if we like use up all the sort of fresh water on XYZ, then we are going to have a scarcity of water for other purposes. And yeah, like, water is a really, really, really important resource, obviously. And 70% of, you know, all of our water is going to food. And a lot of that is animals. That doesn't seem like the best idea. It's like that meme, do you know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, this is my budget. £1,000 candles, £10 food, £5 clothes. Help me, my family is dying. Like, maybe stop spending so much on candles. Maybe just a touch less. And obviously it's more complex than just not doing as much, right? Because we've had so many systems in place, built these systems over such a long period of time that dismantling them is very, very difficult, right? The supply chains and all of those nonsense words that people will use when they want to divert your attention away from very obvious problems, all of those apply here, right? It's not easy to just say, let's just stop doing this. But that's not also an excuse to just not try, you know?
Like, yeah.
I've seen some online intellectuals of late kind of talk about climate change specifically and say, well, we can't stop using fossil fuels. The only way we'll ever stop using them is by when they run out. So we may as well just put a tax on carbon and try to make a very, very slow transition. And not even look at, you know, getting rid of fossil fuels as an option until we have to.
Yeah. It also strikes me that, like, using animals for your, like, for a decent chunk of your calories is like if we generated electricity and then didn't use that electricity, like, we didn't transfer it to the houses directly. We used that electricity to charge batteries. Mm-hmm. And then we delivered those batteries to people's homes. And the process of charging the battery, like, lost, like, 90% of the power.
Or you deliver them to people's homes using electric-powered vehicles.
Yes, more batteries.
More batteries. So it's like, okay, we charge these batteries to then send these batteries to you. And then you've also got to use energy to swap the batteries over and to send them back. It's a whole, yeah, but it makes sense, right? It's more convenient. They taste better. Ridiculous. But sort of back to the impact of meat. Three quarters of the world's ice-free land area has been affected by human use. This is, I'm reading this verbatim, links in the description, of course. And most of that is agriculture, right? So we just kind of are using up a lot of the planet, essentially, to make food and stuff. And what we tend to do is chop down forests and go into places and flatten them down and then, you know, not want different sort of wildlife living there, because if wildlife's living there and we've kind of destroyed their habitat and they want some food, perhaps, they might try and take some of ours, and we don't want them doing that. And that then results in a loss of biodiversity, which is not good. We'll be talking about that later this month in a kind of drastic way. But yeah, no, it's not. It's none of this is good stuff. I should say, right? All of the impacts of this are negative. The positive impact is obviously that we all get to eat, which I think is relatively good, you know. But but yeah, no. The way that we're going about this is unsustainable. Just very plainly unsustainable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You could also mention how red meat seems to be a carcinogen, and processed meat is also not good for you if you don't want cancer. It increases your risk of that. But then, I mean, that same can be said for lots of processed foods. But also, I don't know. I feel like when people talk about processed foods, a lot of the time they'll include tofu in that. And I just feel like, as a processed food, tofu compared to, like, a pepperami, I don't know, man. I don't know. I feel like tofu is, you know what I mean? They've not been making pepperamis for as long as they've been making tofu. You know what I mean?
And I think there's quite a lot of evidence that, like, tofu is responsible for quite a lot of Japan being quite a bit healthier than a lot of the West, because they eat so much tofu. It's not like you have, like, a country where they eat loads of pepperami and they're all living to, like, 100.
No, yeah, absolutely, right? I think it's the difference between processed and highly processed. So processed would be, like, you know, flour or even pasta, tofu, that sort of stuff, right? Whereas highly processed...
Sorry, flour.
Flour.
Not flowers.
Did I say flowers?
I thought you said flowers.
No, I'm pretty sure maybe I said flowers. And if I did, I'll change it in the edit. I'm pretty sure I said flour. So, like, you know what I mean? Because if you think about it, flour is necessarily processed, right?
Yeah.
The difference between processed and highly processed, and lumping those in together, I think maybe isn't the best idea, because people that are very anti-processed foods are not likely going to say no bread anymore. Process.
Also, just a quick side note, one thing I love about flour, especially in this country, is that, like, you know how, like, there's all these conspiracies, like, they're putting things in the water, they are putting things in the flour.
Yeah.
So, like, we think about, especially when you go vegan, right, people will go, well, how do you get your this? You're not going to get all your vitamins. The only reason you get your vitamins is because they put loads of stuff in the flour. They, like, fortify the flour, and you drink milk, which is for a baby cow, and then they fortify, like, soy milk with stuff, and you're like, oh, that's scary, I don't like that. But that your flour is full of, like, extra nutrients, because it's just a really good way of being like, right, everyone eats flour sometimes, or most people eat flour sometimes. We'll just put, like, some probably vitamin B in there, I think.
Yeah. Also your breakfast cereals as well. They do the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, some breakfast cereals, at least in the US, maybe not in the UK, are not vegan. And I think it's niacin that they put in, mm-hmm. which they get from sheep's wool. I'm fairly sure, right? This is all off the top of my head. But the actual products might be different, right? But lots of things are fortified. Lots of them. You're so right. Like, people are scared of additives in their food or things that they don't quite understand. And I think the issue is just a knowledge gap of, like, it's not bad because you don't understand it. It's actually fine. It is fine. And you not understanding this makes it easier for people to just kind of take advantage of that fear of yours. Because, as you're saying, Luke, yeah, they add a lot of stuff to food. Like, a lot of stuff to a lot of foods. Like, I think people just don't really know what fortified sort of flour is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? In that context. I mean, or rather, they just kind of overlook it. Because if everything's saying, oh, fortified... That sounds like good. That sounds all right.
I'm gonna be strong.
Yeah.
Fortified.
Okay. Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm a fortress of a man.
Exactly. But when it's like, oh, they have to add in things to soy milk to make it healthy. Well, I mean, they don't have to. It's just, if you want to use it as a replacement for milk, then yeah, it's probably a good idea to just chuck all the stuff in there that people are going to be expecting from milk. Otherwise, they'll try to replace cow's milk with plant water. And get quite ill, right? I find that when I'm reading We're not really going to be doing a lot on the nutrition here, right? I mean, I will just mention that vegan nutrition is generally fine if you know what you're doing and have the right sort of supplements to go along with it, right? And the argument against that so often I see is, well, it takes too much. People will need to learn different to be able to do this. It requires a lot of different education. Yeah, okay. Do you not think that maybe if instead of teaching kids the nutrition that we teach them now in primary school, we also add in things about how to like you reduce your meat intake and still eat healthily? Do you not think that would maybe reduce the burden later in life of having to figure out how to feed yourself as a vegan, right? Like, not knowing, like, yes, it is probably nice to not, to just be able to eat meat and drink dairy and have all of the sort of nutrients that you need without really necessarily having to worry about it too much. But also the other effects of those foods aren't great, right? Like, if you're having a carcinogen every day, and you're like, yeah, but I don't need to think about all the stuff I put in my body. I don't need to think about B12. Whoa. Then maybe that's also a problem, right? Like a balanced vegan diet with maybe some supplementation, right, for B12 and whatnot is fine. And you can still get B12 from things like Marmite, which you could put into lots of dishes to give a meaty flavor. And so do you know what I mean? It's not like you need to make extra effort as a vegan to eat nutritionally. Right, nutritionally well. You just need to understand the differences between that diet and the diet you've had for the rest of your life.
Well, but this is kind of my point as well about the fortification stuff, is that the idea that you don't have to think about your nutrient intake and your vitamin intake is in part because the government just put some stuff in your flour that you wouldn't otherwise get, or like you wouldn't otherwise get enough. And if you had a system where everybody was eating much more plant-based food, we would just do that with some of the plant-based food the same way we've been doing it. So, like, it's a little bit of an illusion to think, oh, well, the way that I naturally eat just gets me all my things. Because it doesn't, because there's extra fortification in your flour. And there's, like, stuff in your water that keeps your teeth clean and, like, our teeth, like, strong. There's a bunch of stuff that you don't think about, which it's just system design. We've just designed the system so that people will generally be, like, the baseline's okay no matter what they do. Mm. And then we've introduced veganism, which kind of throws everything out a little bit. But we would just rebalance for that if everybody was eating more plant-based food.
No, absolutely. And let's just finish off on the effects of meat before we move on to talking more about veganism, right? So I just want to talk a little bit about the emissions. So 17.3 billion metric tons of greenhouse gases every single year are produced from food production. I've already mentioned that was, food production used up 70% of the world's fresh water. What, 17.3 billion metric tons of greenhouse gases a year. That is 35% of all global emissions, more than the US, apparently, more than double the US. And pretty much invariably, meat production is the worst perpetrator of all of this, right? And again, when it comes to meat, you need to feed your meat something. And so it's not just, this is how much, these are how much greenhouse gases are produced from animals. It's, this is how much is produced from plants, and then we also need to add on animals on top of that. And so necessarily, it is going to be more, right? And when you add in sort of the use of pesticides, fertilizers, all of these different sort of things we're adding in, you know, to a sort of agriculture, that then affects the environment outside of those farm areas. Like if there's runoff or whatnot, you know, that can cause eutrophication, I think it's called, in water systems, which just causes like an increase in plant growth, throws the biodiversity like completely out of whack because you've got some things growing more than they like naturally would, which again has knock-on effects. So like I wish it was as simple as just, oh, we grow lots of food and things fine, but it isn't as simple as that because all of these, like the way that we grow food right now and the way that we produce meat right now is just, it's just really impactful on everything around it. When you add in the sort of climate change aspect, it's just, it's just ridiculous that we're still doing this. You know, we've got the data to show that, hey, the way that we're going about this is harmful to the planet and harmful to our continued existence. And we're all like, wow, we're in too deep now. It's too hard to turn around. And so we may as well not even try.
It's like the thing with the, I don't care that eating red meat will give me cancer. I don't have to change. like, this is just the same. This is like a cancer of humanity. And we're like, I don't care. I just don't want to have to change. So, you know, we'll die. Eh.
Yeah. And then when you get cancer, you're like, oh, well, I mean, I suppose I don't enjoy this as much. Maybe it would have been preferable to eat slightly less red meat and reduce my risk of this thing. You know?
Yeah.
Maybe you don't need to eat red meat all the time. Do you know the people that really like bug me, but not in the way that they want? Are the people who are like, I ate an extra burger today just to wind up a vegan. And I'm like, you frustrate me, but not because you're eating meat. I don't actually care that you're doing that all that much. Why are you doing that? Like, what is wrong with you that you are going out of your way to try to hurt someone that you don't know in a way that is never going to hurt that kind of person? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, why is your, like... Why does that make you feel good? That's a very strange way that you set your reward system up in your brain. That you're like, ah, yes, I'm motivated towards this behavior.
I want to do this thing solely because it will wind up this other person that really, I just find them kind of annoying because they tell me things that are largely true and then I have to reckon with those things. And I don't like reckoning with those things. So what I'll do is I'll dig my heels in and be more stubborn. Like, it doesn't frustrate me and like, oh man, they're eating more meat. I'm just like, you are a confusing kind of person. Like, it frustrates me that I cannot understand your level of just, I want to say idiocy.
And
sure.
Vitriol.
Vitriol, yeah, all of that. I'm just like, yes, some vegans are annoying. Some vegans are very cringe. I agree.
Yeah.
But why are you letting them control your behavior like that? I can't be controlled. I won't stop eating meat. In fact, what I will do is eat double meat. So you're just going to be controlled by other people. Instead of, if you specifically do the exact opposite of what someone is suggesting you do because you don't want to be controlled by them, you are being controlled by them. It's not like, oh, but of my own free will, I'm going to do extra the other direction. That's... I mean, why don't you just do what you would have done anyway? You know? why do you have to go the extra mile? Like, it's so stupid. It's so dumb.
Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
I hope so. We don't have any other bells in this room.
Well, I'll tell you what we don't have in this room, Luke. We don't have people who have subscribed to SciGuys on YouTube and followed us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
I actually have done all those things.
I have too. But why don't we tell people about why specifically that is a very cool and interesting thing for them to do?
Well, we want to be everywhere with you all the time. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, we want to be there with you. If you're on Spotify, we want to be there with you. And if you're on YouTube, we want to be there with you. And you probably want us to be there with you too.
Even if you prefer to listen on Spotify and don't really watch us on YouTube all that much, it really helps if you subscribe on every single platform because it gets us in front of more people, which means it makes it easier to make this show, which you love, right? You love it. You love us, right?
Give me love. Validate my soul.
Subscribe to SciGuys on YouTube and follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify right now.
Heal the deep, deep chasm in my heart.
Let's get back to the show.
So veganism, according to the Vegan Society, is a philosophy and way of living which seeks to exclude, as far as is possible and practicable, all forms of exploitation of and cruelty to animals for food, clothing, or any other purpose, and by extension promotes the development and use of animal-free alternatives for the benefit of animals, humans, and the environment. In dietary terms, it denotes the practice of dispensing with all products derived wholly or partly from animals. It's pretty straightforward, and the key part there I want to point out is as far as is possible and practicable.
I was going to say, because you did a video about this, and I was like, oh wow, the Vegan Society agrees with you, that's really interesting.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, I mean, the thing is that if you need to eat meat for any kind of reason, or need an animal product for any kind of reason, right, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. Like, if you are unable to get the nutrients that you need due to a health condition or whatever... from a vegan diet, if you can't afford the time, to cook vegan foods or to learn to do that, or, you know, you can't find vegan foods where you are because you're in a food desert or whatnot, that's also fine. Like, it's as far as is practicable and possible, right? We can't do the impossible, obviously. So if people are living in places where being vegan consistently is just not feasible, that is fine. Like, I mean, if you're trying to reduce it as much as you can and doing what you can, then that's fine. You don't need to, like, this is the thing. I don't think it needs to be the whole hog or, you know, the whole hog with a an apostrophe or asterisk or whatever it would be if they're trying to make it sound vegan, right? You don't need to go cold turkey or cold tofurkey. You can you can start to phase it out.
You can eat part of the hog, is what Corey's saying. Just don't eat all of it.
Yeah, you know, and ask the hog's consent first as well. That's key. But my point is, yeah, you know, it doesn't need to be about taking all animal products out of your diet. Some people aren't super cut out for that. It's, you know, it can be difficult for them to do that, like much more difficult than for others for a myriad of reasons. But if you're trying to reduce as much as possible, that's still going to have a positive impact, right? I mean, even if that's just like having a couple vegan meals every week, that's not that difficult. And it's much better than you'd expect. I think the issue that people have is that they'll, when non-vegans want to make vegan meals, they'll just take the meat out, or they'll try to replace the meat with something that isn't necessarily a great replacement for meat, right? Mm-hmm. The idea is essentially I'll just make a side dish. I'll just make what I would have as a side dish because I don't know how to make anything without meat otherwise.
That's what the French did to me.
Really?
They served me a plate of green beans when I asked for a vegan meal.
I bet you those green beans were cooked in butter.
Nope, they were just boiled.
Oh.
They were boiled with no salt and nothing else. It was them saying, screw you, we don't like you. We have food perfect in France. I know that that's the case, because it was too much of an insult to be like, I was at like a fancy restaurant inside of a castle, and I said, do you have any vegan food? And they went, here's a plate of boiled green beans. And then they tried to charge me a full meal.
Really?
Yeah.
See, the thing is, when that happens, I'm just like, if you're not able to produce something like food, like French food, right? If you're not able to do something without the use of meat, I feel like your cuisine isn't as good as others, which are more versatile, right?
Like Thai.
Yeah, well, Thai or like almost anything from Asia, right? The fact that you're able to make pretty much, not all of those dishes, but in pretty much all of those cuisines, there are a few, or like, you know, quite a few decent dishes that can be made vegan fairly easily.
Mm.
I think that's probably a better thing than a cuisine that relies so intensely on one or like a collection of like, you know, a few very specific things.
Yeah.
And I get it. Meat has a lot of flavor. It's really good. I'm not saying that French cuisine is inherently worse. I'm just saying my personal opinion, I prefer something that is more versatile and doesn't need to have like these specific things to be remotely good, right? Like I feel like a chef that cannot make something satisfying that is vegan is probably not that great compared to someone that is able to do that and also do other things, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, the point is that veganism is, it doesn't need to be as strict as you think, right? Like if you, out of your own control, need to have animal products for some reason or another, like for example, if it's in your medication, you're still vegan. That's fine.
Yeah.
Also, honey's vegan. Honey's vegan. Shut up. Stop being stupid.
Just get good honey.
Yeah.
Get nice honey.
Exactly. But even then, right? Bees aren't being exploited in the way that farm animals are, right? Like they're bees. I'm pretty sure they could. I read this somewhere. It may or may not be true, but I'm pretty sure the queen can just kind of fly away if necessary and start a new hive if the bees are like, I'm not feeling this, right? But like, they're bees. You give them the place to live and you just take the honey without harming them and they're fine. They make more honey than they're going to use. And again, they're bees. They're not being like horribly exploited. I mean, if you go to that point, right, we've spoken about this already, bees are shipped around, you know, the US to fertilize different plants or whatnot, right? And if you want to say, any animal exploitation at any part of the chain is bad, you've also got to cut a bunch of fruit and veg out your diet that use bees artificially, you know, to sort of fertilize them.
Mm-hmm.
So just to give you some stats, in 2019, there were about 600,000 vegans in the UK. And in 2023, it seems about 4% of British people or British consumers identified as vegan, which is roughly 2.7 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's grown so quickly.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's consumers, though, right? So maybe it's not 2.7 million. Maybe it's only people over the age of 16. I don't really know. But 4% is still a high number. and higher than 600,000.
That's what you came to this podcast for? Solid maths with Corey.
But yeah, no, I mean, even if it's not up to 2.7 million, 4% of consumers is still a pretty big chunk, right? And it seems to be increasing and increasing. And it is getting easier, like, you know, over the past 10 years.
Oh, God.
It's gotten insanely easy,
when
right?
I started being vegan, you like sometimes I'd go to a restaurant and I could have chips and that was it.
Jeez.
And now I can pretty much go to any restaurant and there'll be something I can eat that's like has some semblance of being a meal.
Yeah, and you know, I've noticed that even, you know, not just in London, the US is terrible for this. The US is it sucks. It is bad. It's horrible. You can probably get an Impossible Burger in most places, but that is it. Mm-hmm. That is all you'll be getting. But in the UK and a few other places, it's pretty good, right? Mm. It's gone from, okay, you can maybe get falafel and hummus as an option in a few places to actually decent options, like in a lot of restaurants.
Norway's not doing a good job. Mexico is amazing.
Vegan Mexican food in sort of California is insane. I mean, it's California, right? So obviously, but like it is, oh, it's so good, so much better than the UK. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of being here and not having good Mexican food. I should probably go to Mexico for actual Mexican
but
food.
But do you like healthcare?
Yeah, I suppose I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose I do. Yeah. Hmm. That is a tough one.
Good Mexican food, the NHS.
That
Which
is,
one do you pick?
That's a toss-up,
You only
honestly.
Get one.
That is a toss-up. Oh, I'll think about it. I'll stew on it for a bit. But if we talk about the environmental impacts of vegans and vegetarians, people that eat fish, compared to people that eat meat, compare all those things together. What do you think? What do you think the situation is?
Well, I think probably overall the vegans would win.
Win on what?
On having less CO2 emissions. Mm-hmm. Just again, just purely thermodynamically, I think that's a pretty good bet.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it goes in the reverse order of what I said. So vegans, vegetarians, fish eaters, and meat eaters, right? That's an increasing environmental impact. And yeah, it's obviously... Right? Like, obviously. And, you know, we don't really seem to talk about as much about the environmental impacts of fishing, right? Because it isn't just the greenhouse gases that are produced. I'm pretty sure those are significantly less than you know, what's used in meat production. But fishing is real bad for the environment, right? Like, we've got so much plastic in the ocean, and I'm pretty sure that the majority of that comes from fishing lines. And, you know, that sort of stuff, as opposed to rubbish that we just throw out that ends up in the ocean, right? I think it's mostly coming from fishing. And we have overfished so much in so many places that it's just a serious problem that we don't seem to focus on as much as all of the other problems that we've got going on.
It's just fish, mate. It's just fish. They can't even smile. What are you talking about?
I think
give us a smile, love.
Do you know what? I think it's literally just that fish are in the ocean and very much out of sight, out of mind. Do you know what I mean? Like you can't see the fish population easily. There's no way to visualize that easily. But like deforestation, you can. Like the numbers of cows that we are sort of keeping alive for us specifically is something that you can kind of conceptualize. But the number of fish in the sea, there's always plenty more, isn't there?
Yeah, I saw a really funny, you know when comedians like do their stand-up set and then they post it on TikTok?
Mm.
I saw one the other day that was like this guy going, who likes zoos here? Does anyone like zoos? And the crowd is generally like, boo. Mm-hmm. And this one lady's like, no, I don't like zoos. And he goes, oh, why don't you like zoos? And she's like, because they're locked up and they're sad. And he's like, oh, you're a vegetarian? And she's like, no. And she turned and the whole crowd's like, oh, shit.
Jeez. Well, some animals are supposed to be eat, and some animals are supposed to be free.
And that's God's way.
So dumb. Oh, my God. Well, not dumb, just stupid, you know?
A synonym for dumb.
Yeah. But, so, I mean, there's been a few different studies, I mean, a number of different studies on this. There was an Oxford University study as well, which found that eating vegan in middle to higher income countries is cheaper. And you'll always hear people saying, oh, veganism is expensive. It's expensive to eat this and that. Yes, vegan meat substitutes are more expensive than their meat counterparts. Also, would point out that a lot of meat is subsidized, so it's artificially cheaper, and you don't need to have the vegan meat substitutes to eat vegan, right? You can, like, tofu is pretty cheap, right? It's relatively cheap. You've also got lentils. You've also got a bunch of other sort of foods that are higher in protein, are higher protein, that are nutrient dense, that you can have in place of meat substitutes that are cheaper than having meat. So yeah, this study essentially found if you take out sort of eating out or any kind of takeaway, then yeah, eating vegan is going to be cheaper than meat alternatives. But also it's cheaper than vegetarian or a sort of mixed diet where they describe it as flexitarian. But essentially, yeah, up to one third you could cut your budget by if you go vegan.
And it feels like over the next sort of few decades, as we try slowly to move our supply chains and our just general economy away from subsidizing things that we maybe aren't. Like putting a carbon tax on oil, for example. Well, we're currently doing the opposite of that for something that is a known carcinogen,
yep,
and also creates a lot of greenhouse gases. That's the kind of thing that I expect, even though it would be politically very difficult, expect to slowly be like walked back a little bit. So those prices of meat may well go up. And as I said, with the fortification stuff, if you're looking at veganism and going, well, you know, it's unsustainable because it's more expensive. Well, but if everyone was doing it, those subsidies would move over to the vegan food.
Yeah. And it also isn't more expensive as well.
It's also not more expensive. Sorry, yes, that's also great.
It's not
more expensive, and the alternative is subsidized.
Yeah, and even if you look at sort of lower income countries or lower income to lower middle income countries. I'll read this verbatim for you. Healthy and sustainable diets are substantially less costly than Western diets and can also be cost competitive in the medium to long term, subject to beneficial socioeconomic development and reductions in food waste. Essentially, what that's saying is that in those lower and lower middle income countries, right, it is more expensive to have a healthy, sustainable diet compared to the current diet that they've got. But when compared to Western diet, it's less expensive, and it can be less expensive sort of overall in the long run if you reduce food waste and invest in the right sort of areas, right? So if we look at this over a longer period of time, yes, it's more expensive now for these countries, but compared to where we are now, in richer Western countries, it is cheaper on that metric. And in the long term, it's going to be cheaper overall. To have a sort of lower amount of meat and more sustainable diets, right? These are going to be cheaper, and they are cheaper now in a lot of countries. It's just I don't understand where this idea comes from, other than people just looking at sort of vegan meat alternatives and saying that's more expensive.
But it's also just more expensive because less people are having it.
Yeah,
like it's just economics. Like we're producing less of it, so it's been produced in less scale, and it doesn't have as much investment in it, so it's more expensive. That's like I understand that in the short term that's hard, but that's not an argument against it on a systemic level or on a countrywide level. It might be an argument against somebody who can't afford it right now doing it, and an absolutely valid argument. Well, not a valid argument, as it turns out, because it's actually not more expensive.
Well, I want to point out as well that it's not just the price of the things themselves. It can take longer to cook, say, lentils or whatever, right?
Sure.
And so that then becomes an issue of, having time to do that or having the knowledge of how to do, of how to cook sort of healthy, varied meals, right? And all of that can come from different sort of levels of change or different changes at a systemic level, right, in different areas, right? It starts with education in school and how to do these things. It could also be making it so that people don't have to work such ridiculously long hours just to barely survive, and so that they then need to go to sort of cheap foods or fast foods or whatnot just to be able to survive, right? These the problems with these sorts of diets, I think, are not inherent to the diets themselves. They are problems that are brought on by other issues culturally and societally, right? So someone not being able to afford food that is cheaper, but requires more energy to cook, maybe. And, not just energy in terms of your own physical energy, but if you're cooking for longer, it might be more energy costs, to power your home for that, right? So someone that might not be able to afford those things, or that might not have the time after work to do that, all of these sorts of things, right? Those are not issues with the diets themselves. That's an issue with the society that we have and we can fix those issues. Maybe we should make it so that people don't have to work to that degree and not be able to afford, you know what I mean? Like, not be able to afford necessities all that easily. That is not... That it's not an issue of an expensive and difficult to cook diet. That's an issue with a society that doesn't value human life or well-being.
Yeah, and I suppose also like the incentive structures we set up in order to incentivize people to make those decisions are not aligned with the common good, which is kind of what they ought to be aligned with. That's what they're for.
Yeah, exactly. I was looking at a few different places, right? And there are sort of conflicting studies on this. But it seems that sort of overwhelmingly, they start to point in a direction of, yeah, reducing meat intake is just beneficial, right? It is just beneficial on a number of fronts. And the only sort of issues with it is that we're not making the efforts to do that. We've got so much set in place that makes it difficult to sort of change from what we're doing now. And again, I feel that people use that as an excuse to not try to make those changes for the better, which just, it just seems ridiculous, right? Like, again, it's biodiversity loss, it's greenhouse gas emissions, it's land use, it's water pollution and use, right? There are so many different factors, right? And reducing meat intake can help all of them. Not even, you know, getting rid of meat altogether. I can't imagine we'd live in a society wherein meat is just not something that people have at all. And I personally don't think that should be the case. I don't really mind the concept of hunting if you're doing it right. And when I say right, I mean, okay, if you're using a high-powered rifle to kill a deer, nah, man, you use a bow and arrow. If that animal can't kill you back...
it needs to be fair. It needs to be a sport.
Well, I wouldn't even say a sport. I mean,
but as in a sport played with two players. One's and one's the deer.
The deer.
and we televise it.
Yeah.
And like, and we make the odds equal.
Yeah, well, no. I mean, look, so I guess my point is more that, like, I feel like if you're going to hunt for food, hunt for it. That's fine. But don't hunt for sport, you know? Hunt for some, like, if you know, hunt, don't hunt for trophies, blah, blah, blah. If you're hunting for food, you're using the entire animal and doing so in a way that it is sustainable, right? If you want to go out and do that, that's totally fine. Like I've said many times, if I'm stuck on a desert island, I'm eating as many animals as I can. I'm taking that as an I'm gonna be killing all them rabbits. I'm gonna be doing it. I'm gonna be eating them. I don't care, right? I do have a moral objection to sort of factory farming and how animals are treated, you know, in the meat industry right now. Absolutely. But do I have an issue generally with animals on a farm being treated really well and then sometimes being killed for food? Not a huge issue if it's you and your farm and that's what you want to do. The level that we've got it now, where they're just being treated horribly from birth to death, feels less good, you know? But like, yeah, also hunting, it's like, well, that's fine. It's all very natural, isn't it? Not that natural is a good argument for anything, but like animals in the wild, they're going to be hunted.
Yes, we don't sit and mourn every day for all the animals hunted by other animals because that is just the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just feel like if you're, you know, I don't think you're causing the same amount of harm to an animal that is living in the wild and is then potentially predated by another animal, in comparison to raising animals in horrid conditions, solely for the purpose of, you know, being made into cheap meat, which is probably then going to end up as food waste, right?
Like, yeah.
It's just, it's so wasteful and so pointless and so incredibly harmful. But we don't even need to talk about the sort of, that aspect of it, the moral aspect of it, because the environmentalism aspect is already overwhelming. So just some stats here for you. The dietary impact of vegans were 25.1% of high meat eaters for greenhouse gas emissions, 25.1% for water use, 27% for eutrophication, and 34.3% for biodiversity. So that's like the percentage.
It's worst case, it's like a third.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And 30% differences were found between low and high meat eaters for most indicators as well, right? So even reducing your intake of meat is a good thing. Mm-hmm. You don't need to go 100% vegan, but still, like, the amount of meat we eat now is not necessary, and is unsustainable, and just bad for the planet generally, right? Like, it seems like a no-brainer. Like, I'm sure you'll be fine reducing how much meat you eat. Like, again, if you can't enjoy a meal that doesn't have meat in it, you're bad at cooking. You're just bad at it, genuinely. Like, I mean, I cook vegan stuff, and I take people to vegan restaurants as well. And, you know, people that are like, there are people that would turn their nose up at vegan food, and I've taken them to a vegan restaurant. They're like, oh, wow, no, this was so good.
Yeah.
So good. Mallow in London, by the way, check it out. Tell them the Sci Guy has set you. And Mallow, if you're watching this, please.
Me and Rebecca went to our anniversary. They invited us and gave us a free meal. It was very lovely.
All I've got from him is a heart on Instagram.
Well, that's more than nothing.
That's true. That is more than nothing. But the point is that, you know, if you give people different vegan foods, they might realize, oh, actually, this is fine. Like, I feel like a lot of the resistance to veganism, it just comes from a culture of not being able to cook very well. And so the best thing in your meal always being meat, because you suck in making things taste good. And meat it tastes good with a very little effort, you know. And to be fair, if that's the issue, then there are a lot of substitutes coming out that taste really bloody good. Do they taste exactly like meat? No, but they taste really bloody good. Have you had that, like, vegan steak from, you can only get it in Waitrose, I think. But
I've not had that, but this isn't sausage. Oh.
Oh, yeah.
They're advertised ever at the moment, and they are so good.
And what is it? The Richmond sausages are bloody brilliant as well. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? They're like those processed foods that, you know, that are not good because they're meat, right? As in, a sausage is rarely great because it's like a really good bit of meat. It tastes good because it's fatty.
And sausage.
And all, you know what I mean? Even chicken nuggets and stuff, right? They don't taste good because they're chicken. They taste good because of all the nugget.
It's all the bread.
Yeah.
The breaded on the outside.
Exactly.
And the deep fried,
probably
vegetable oil.
Exactly, right? So you can replace a lot of things and they'll be relatively decent. Or similar enough. And again, you will not remember what meat tastes like after a while.
Yeah, I have no recollection.
And so it gets to the point where you're like, why are you clinging on to this thing that you only probably like as much as you do because it is all you've had for your whole life, right? And this other thing, this substitute, isn't necessarily worse. It's just different and not what you're used to. And so you prefer the familiar thing, right? When after a while, having that substitute, it's going to be on par. It's going to be the same level, right? It's not, like, I don't think if I were to have meat right now, I'd be like, oh, man, God, yeah, I've missed this. I don't really miss it at all.
Also, you know that feeling when you're a child and, like, the new Game Boy comes out or, like, the new iPhone comes out and it's much better than the old iPhone?
Mm.
You kind of get that all the time with veganism because there's so much innovation happening in veganism that it's like, oh my gosh, this new product, like the kind of meat and dairy world is pretty much like done. They're not really innovating there. They're just doing the same thing that they've always done. Maybe there's a new thing occasionally, like a new quiche-y, steaky thing, but like, who knows? But veganism is very exciting. It's like constantly new products all the time.
Yeah, and you know, they don't even need to be like processed ones. Like, I mean, as you say, new products, but like finding out about different mushrooms and stuff. This is such a vegan conversation. but you know, finding out about different mushrooms that have different sort of textures and flavors that are really bloody meaty in their own way. It's insane.
Yeah, sure. I find mushrooms genuinely terrifying, but you enjoy.
Thank you, Luke. I appreciate that. And just to quickly go past a few different sort of things with vegan diets. So we've already spoken about sort of soy milk and how, or soy rather, and how soy mostly goes to animal feed. People will point out, oh, plant milks they use up a lot of water. So, you know, almond milk, yeah. Uses up a lot of water. Don't we use that more water?
Milk?
Dairy milk, yeah. rice milk uses up a lot of water. It produces a lot of emissions. You know what produces more?
Milk?
Dairy milk and beef, yeah.
Yeah.
Soy, it uses less land than dairy, uses less water than dairy, uses less, it produces fewer emissions than dairy. Same goes for rice, oat, and almond, right? All of them sort of use less space, use less water, and produce fewer emissions than dairy milk. And yet, the argument is always, but you forget Almond milk is really bad for the environment. Not compared to dairy. Not compared to the one that you're using. And yeah, they can't be used as substitutes for dairy milk because they don't have the same nutrients in them. But, one, they don't need to be used as direct substitutes. And two, they can be fortified, as we've said, to have, you know, to be used essentially as milks. So unless the fortification process, you know, doubles, more than doubles the carbon emissions of the highest sort of carbon emission one, which would be rice milk, or, you know, I guess quadruples, octuples, by a lot, you know, oat or soy milk when it comes to land use, or even, you know, just under doubles the water usage of almond milk, then yeah, fortified plant milks are going to be better than dairy milk in pretty much every regard. It's so annoying, man.
I can't imagine having the gotcha of like, did you know almond milk's worse for the environment? That's why I drink milk. And then being like, look at the stats and be like, oh God.
The stats are, do you want to, look, you want to see the stats, look at this shit.
Oh my God.
Look at this.
Oh God. Yeah, there's no argument left. I can't even see the little line for rice milk.
Yeah, exactly, right. I mean, if you want to see this this graphic, you could check the links in the description if you're listening. And if you're watching, you probably saw it because I might have put it in there. But yeah, no, I mean, if you don't want to go and look at it, basically, dairy milk dwarfs everything. And so, yeah, when you compare, you know, milks to each other, I mean, I stopped drinking almond milk, by the way, for, I mean, I never actually liked almond milk in comparison to oat and soy, but I reduced my almond milk intake because I was like, oh man, almond milk uses up a lot of water. That's not good.
Yeah.
Still a lot less than dairy, though.
Yeah, I remember hearing that stat and being like, oh, okay, I will stop.
Yeah.
And then, like, never went, like, that was it.
I think this is the thing, like, I make changes to my diet based on, or my consumption based on things that I find out. Like, you know, when I found out, oh, wow, aerosol deodorants are, like, yep, real bad.
Roll-on.
I was like, okay, I'll just use Roll-on now. That's fine. I don't, and now I just use Roll-on. Or when I found out that, you know, oh, you can buy hand soap in not in the little plastic squeezy bottles, but you can actually just get the hand soap in much bigger things and you squeeze it into, you know, the dispenser yourself. I was like, oh, cool. I will now exclusively buy that because it uses less plastic. It probably isn't, like, you know, I mean, I don't want to say, like, I will blindly buy into any sort of marketing from any company, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, if something uses less plastic and if something seems to be environmentally beneficial, I'll just make that small change. And people think of it as, like, I think, you know, I've got to change my entire life. You expect me to change everything. What, do this and that and this and that. No, you can just do a couple things at a time, and then it's actually very easy, right? Like, I went vegetarian because someone told me I couldn't, and then I went vegan.
Did you really?
Well, I wanted to be vegetarian from when I was a kid, and then I didn't, and then I say that it's because someone told me I couldn't because it's funny, but I did want to be a vegetarian as a child, right? So I was vegetarian from, like, the age of 18, basically as soon as I was able to, like, when I was living on my own, right? And I went vegan maybe, like, 3 years later. And that was a difficult one, right? It took a while for me to get into it fully, but now it's been, like, however long, and I don't even really think about it, right? I don't think about using Roll-On now. It's just the thing that I use. I just don't use aerosol deodorants, and I don't remember using them. Do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't an inconvenience, and it's not something I even remotely think about now. It's just a habit, I guess, that I have when I'm shopping. I will just go for this, right? I try to avoid things that, if I find out that, oh, this company is really bad in this way, I'll try to avoid it. But, like, you know what I mean? I'm not constantly searching for what company is morally wrong or what is doing this or who are doing that. If I see something about it, I'm like, oh, I can make a change and I'll do that. Like, you know, I heard about Oatly. I think, what was it? They were really bad in some way about,
they got bought out by some company that's not doing the greatest stuff, as far as I understand it.
Yeah, I think you're right. They were bought out by some company that was doing deforestation in the Amazon or whatnot, right? And so I was like, oh, maybe I'll avoid them for at least a bit. And I don't really think about it all that much, right? It's not that difficult to make sort of conscious choices when it comes to the sustainability of your consumption. And yes, obviously that comes from a level of privilege. Like if you have little choice in what you can buy, if you're sort of really restricted with your budget, or if you don't have the time, or if you don't understand any of the sort of stuff that's being said. Yeah, there are many reasons that trying to switch to a more sustainable pattern of consumption might not be feasible. But we're not talking about people in those positions, obviously, right? Like, again, when it comes to the definition of veganism, it's as much as is possible and practicable. And so if we're talking about it being easy to reduce your consumption or to alter your consumption to be more sustainable, and you're sitting there being like, well, in my experience, I can't do this thing that you suggested because I can't afford it, or I don't have the time to do the research or to find alternatives or to take these extra steps. That's fine. If it's not possible for you, then it's not possible for you. But if it is possible for you, then you should give it a go, because it is actually very easy when you've got the means. And to be honest, a lot of people in this country, in the UK, have the means of making little more, little sustainable choices. Like, they very much do. Even though we're going through a cost of living crisis, even though all of the problems that we've got going on right now, there are still a lot of people that you just put just a little bit of thought into it a couple times, and then you don't need to think about it again, right? Like, being like, oh, remember, I need to remember to buy roll-on, and you start buying roll-on, right, instead of aerosol. And that's that. There you go. Very easy, very straightforward. And I'm pretty sure a lot of these things are even if they're more expensive up front, like, I feel like roll-on lasts longer than spray-on deodorant. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't actually pay attention to how much deodorant I buy. But, I feel like these little changes that you make end up being, better for you in the long run anyway, especially if more people start switching to these things and they can become cheaper, as you were mentioning earlier. But yeah, that's pretty much it from me, to be honest with you, man. Like, I don't really have anything else to talk about. Anything else you want to add?
Well, the only thing I would like to add is to say people should go and watch the Kurzgesagt animation about veganism, because it breaks down a lot of really complex sort of math on the CO2 and on like various things, and it does a very good job. But it's very non-judgmental. So go search for that.
Well, thank you very much, Luke. And I think there's just one thing left to do. It's the quickfire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. Veganism edition.
The rules for the quickfire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question between you and the audience. The first person to answer the question after finish asking wins. What do they win, Luke?
They win one carbon credit to spend as they please.
And your question is, how many vegans were there in the UK in 2019?
About 2.7 million.
Yeah, good. Ding, ding, ding. Correct enough.
Correct enough.
We didn't know if I was correct in the first place, Luke, so it's not really on you. It's more on me. But that is all from us. Before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with an extra special thank you to executive producers Janito and Glitchrabbit. And thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday. And why not leave us a nice wee comment? Support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find it at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCory everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Go away.